And welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, your host, coming to you from Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Been doing it a while. We're always buying and selling silver and gold, platinum and palladium. I bet you don't have much of that. But we do specialize in coins, estates, accumulations, investment portfolios. We help people preserve and protect their wealth, their capital, hard assets, the real stuff, the stuff that God made, the stuff that lasts. It's interesting that real assets last. And even if you think about it, for some of you, this may be way over your head, but even antiques, good quality antiques, they last. That's a good, you know, good quality antiques. I should be careful because people hear me say stuff and then they go out with an insufficient amount of education and make buying decisions. I'm not saying to do that ever. I'm always saying no matter what you do, be wise. But antiques have done very well over centuries. I mean, you can go back to the 15th, 16th century, and antiques then were good. Antiques from that era, antiques that were good back then are now worth millions. And trust me, there's plenty of them out there. Collectibles, cars, old cars. There's, you know, some old, obviously old coins are a no-brainer. They're part of our sector, our industry. But, you know, precious metals-based assets, also, I mean, that's kind of the central hub of it all, is real money is precious metals. Real money is precious metals based, I should say. Real money, the kind that's going to last until God says, I'm yanking the rug. Think about it, too. The problem is, if you go back over thousands of years, you know, if you're somewhat of a historian, you'd realize that societies have come and literally gone, and that all of their markets have completely fallen apart. You would realize that investing in stocks, bonds, and paper assets is nothing new, that goes back 3,000 years. There have been trading markets for 3,000 years. Paper assets, trading cattle, trading camels, all the way back to 800 BC, literally, markets where they sit and they trade. This isn't a new idea. This is what mankind does. They want to simplify. It's like, why have to bring your 800 camels? Just get a certified piece of paper that's notarized and has the seal of the magistrate on it that says, yes, I certify he has these camels, and now you have a piece of paper you can trade. What a great idea, except for what happens when the camels die? What happens when the guy runs off with the camels? What happens when the piece of paper is fraudulent? What happens when too many people get involved in the market and start trading paper and they can't erase the camels? I mean, seriously, there's all kinds of things like this. This is what we have going on in our marketplace. We have investors, you know, in stock. Okay, folks, what is stock? Stock is supposed to be a little tiny bitty piece of a company. But the truth is, it's a little bitty tiny piece of the remaining crumbs of a company. And what I mean by that is this. A company runs, you know, they pay all their employees and all their vendors and all their overhead and all their CEOs and so on and so forth. And then at the end of all that and their taxes and everything, whatever profits left gets divvied up hypothetically between all the shareholders. Well, guess what? People have mastered that system. They've mastered, in other words, the CEOs, the Wall Street execs, they've mastered this system to set it up to make themselves a lot of money. You get a corporation that's doing relatively well, all of a sudden they create the vendor for the company and they increase the prices on goods, and the vendor becomes a private corporation that's drawing money out of the company without the shareholders' knowledge, but it's legal technically, sort of. You know, this kind of stuff happens all over the place. When you buy stocks or paper in your 401k, you're betting on man, well, period. You're betting on man and his ability to produce a phenomenal profit in a questionable economy. When you buy a stock and you say, boy, I hope that stock goes way up for me. First of all, that should never really be, I mean, we all have that desire, but that shouldn't be your investment guidance, you know, mentality. What you should want is to preserve and protect at the minimum your capital, because things happen and because you really want to maintain your spending power. That's what matters. You can have all kinds of stuff, you know, going on, but you want that money to maintain your spending power. You want, you know, everyone has the little hope, but the truth of it is, folks, when you hope a stock explodes, just look at the company. You don't need to hope. Look at the company. And think that here's what you're doing. You're buying a share of stock, so you end up owning, you know, 1/100 billionth of a corporation or whatever it is. And you want the company to just grow by 40. You want your stock to double, okay? Well, the company's probably not going to double if you've done your research. And the only way your stock's going to go up temporarily is on hype. More people pouring, pumping money into the company buying stock. So it's a speculative market. It's a casino market. It's all based on the come. It's all based on hype. And I just really hope you can understand that. You know, companies, you think, okay, well, I'll get into newer companies that aren't so popular. Yeah, there's a new level of hype there. They crash and burn, or, you know, the angel investors pile in and drive them up. By the time they go public, folks, you know, usually they're pretty well tapped. The thing about the IPOs, and that's the initial public offerings, is for years there was this insane hype around it. So any IPO would just explode through the roof and make crazy gains. None of that was real. That was pre 9/11. That's when things were just bonkers. I went to a funeral of a family friend. We've got this family of friends or friends, family, whatever, that we met when we were in elementary school, and I lived in Eugene, Oregon. And one of the guy, the dad was a doctor. He's since passed. And the kids, one of them's the director of a massive bank in London who, you know, works with Trump and the other kids. They're just phenomenally successful. And quite a while ago, their dad, who was a surgeon, passed away. And when we were spending time at their house as they prepared for the funeral, one of the daughter's husbands, who was at the time a big shot on CNN, well, a big shot on Wall Street, who was regularly on CNN, who put together IPOs, the whole time we're preparing, or the family's preparing for the funeral. And I mean by preparing, I mean the daughters are getting together pictures. They're putting the whole thing together. And this guy's back there. This is like right after 9/11. And this guy's back in the back bedroom the whole time and wandering around on his phone just trying to put together deals, you know, IPOs, deals. And he's talking a lot of talk. And I talked to him a little bit. The guy was just not my type. Pretty super arrogant, you know, hot shot. And, you know, he's telling me things, and I'm asking him questions, and he's circle talking me, and I'm like, dude, this, you know, after a while, I'm like, this isn't sounding right to me. So you're telling me this about that company. Well, he ended up being the one that went down where he would get these little tiny ho-dunk companies out in the middle of nowhere that would produce some weird product. So what they would do is they'd watch patents. And they would find a patent that sounded really good. And then they would take that. They'd contact the company and say, hey, I can take you public and make you a ton of money. And the guys would be like, dude, I'm working out of my back garage here. And he'd be like, I don't care. I can do it. So then the company, his company, this Tom guy, he would put together these fake packages of IPOs showing, you know, the super patent, and he'd have fake pictures of company corporate financials and all this stuff. And he'd get all these investors to just dump millions and millions and millions of dollars into it. That, you know, and these guys that just got a patent that didn't know left from right, they're like, sure, I'll go for the ride. And, you know, basically this guy went down for taking people down for fraud. It's essentially fraud, what he did. But so many people lost so much money. Of course, they got divorced and so on and so forth. But, it, you know, I was right there at the heartbeat. I mean, that's it. They're just, it's just all about greed and money. The thing that keeps it, I wouldn't use the word stable, but together, is the quantity of people that are there with money. And so we are getting to the point where we've got, you know, potential war with Kim Jong-un. And we've got Vladimir Putin today saying that we're very close to a serious armed conflict. And we've still got the Middle East. We've got ISIS hating our guts. We've got internally bad things going on. Folks, I did some research the other day, like too much. I watched video after video and did tons of reading on the Charlottesville event, where the supposed white supremacists, you know, went crazy. I'll tell you, in a nutshell, 100% guaranteed, 100% confident, that was all put together. What's going on now is George Soros is hiring these people all over. All these staged riots and staged protests. George Soros is paying people to pile into buses, and I mean buses. He's paying for these people to show up at these events and raise holy ruckus. I mean, and it's a fact. It's Charlottesville. I mean, they've done it all over the place. When Obama was in office, and in, you know, you've probably seen the videos of the guys during the Trump rallies that said he'd hire mentally ill people to go pick fights in the line so the media would get it. He said they couldn't get inside because there was Secret Service coverage. But he literally would pay these morons to go intentionally pick fights and to say, look how violent Trump crowds are. Just craziness. So on this deal in Charlottesville, in a nutshell, what happened is this. And I trust me, I've watched it all. There was a staged event. They had everybody in position, literally like a large movie production. This is starting to occur now. This is the new way. They literally give everybody a position. They get together with hundreds of people. They're staging an entire downtown. This was when they were taking down the Robert E. Lee statue. They tell everybody where to be and what to do and what's going on. So people get in their positions, and then they have film of these girls walking the entire downtown, up and down and side to side on every street, getting pictures of everybody and everything so that if anything comes up, they have the perfect video footage and proof of who was where. You know, the minivan that was in that was part of this huge accident gets staged, it gets parked. All these people get into place. And then this little protest starts with these Unite the Writers, okay? The night before, they showed some people storming around yelling, you know, you will not replace us with Jews and all this stuff that sounds real Naziistic. Well, nobody knows who those people were. They're not, they weren't with any of the conservative groups. They were put out there by George Soros's, you know, Move On or People for the American Way. They were put out there to storm around by torchlight and get people angry. And then they disappeared. And then the next day, all this stuff starts. So the Unite the Writers show up to this event. And, you know, they've had their permit revoked over and over. They've had to, which, you know, needing a permit to assemble is unconstitutional anyway, as long as it doesn't cause violence or a public nuisance. The reason they say they need a permit is because, you know, you can block traffic and all that. But the problem is that's the new way. The old way of protesting, you didn't disrespect the streets and try to block people in their cars and cause huge traffic jams and, you know, destroy businesses. That's what the left has done. That's the radical communist intimidation technique. So anyway, it's so out of line. So the Unite the Writers get down there and they start doing their thing. And there's people, you know, kind of debating with them and whatnot, but nothing too crazy. And all of a sudden, like, 8 buses pull up. And out of these buses come pouring these enraged kids with shields and helmets and big sticks and water bottles full of concrete and all this stuff. And what's ironic is out of these buses, both the BLM, Black Lives Matter, and the KKK are getting out of the same bus. Literally. Multiple eyewitnesses. They poured out of the same bus. It's all fake. It's all staged. They're costumes. By the way, when's the last time you saw someone wear a KKK shirt or a KKK uniform, whatever you call that thing? They're not going to do that. It's all staged. And then the media just drinks it up. You know, and then this huge violence ensues. And it's huge. And then the Unite the Writers just take this beating. A guy ends up blinded with acid. People have, you know, there's like 7 of them in the hospital with cracked skulls. You know, all this stuff. What do the police do? Nothing. So these innocent bystanders say, and the other part that's really weird is these innocent bystanders say that the cops corralled them. They kenneled them. I think there's a term for it. I don't remember what the term is, but it might be kenneling, where they literally put up their shields and they push them all into the corner. Well, all these innocent people, like mothers with children, were there watching. These cops kennel them. And these mothers are like, let us out, let us out. The cops, they said, stared straight through them, wouldn't let them. And these crazed maniacs that George Soros has paid for are beating women. They're beating children. There's blood spilt everywhere. Bones are broken. It's out of control. The cops do nothing. Why? They had the National Guard there. They were ready for it. The people of Charlottesville, whatever, Virginia or West Virginia, had voted 8-2 or 80-20, 80% unanimous vote to keep the statue. And the city council, who's headed by a big Black Lives Matter guy, he overrode it. They overrode it and took it down. Now, this is one thing we need to start looking at. There are stages of genocide coming, where when you take so, by the way, and I could tell more of the story, but I'm telling you, I've seen all the videos. Then there's this supposed car hit, a girl's, you know, supposedly hurt by this racist. She disappears. The blood on the window doesn't match any of the pictures of how she hit or where she laid. And then, you know, there's all these crazy, perfectly acted out things where all these protesters that have on these black and white bandanas around their neck are in control of all the medics. And, you know, it's just they keep the cameras away. And there's just a lot going on. And I know I'm not doing a good job, but I watched so much of that stuff, I was blue, you know. But there's no doubt. So now these events are being staged. We're being fooled by the media. We know it, but the problem is, so you go to an alternative news source, right? And you say, well, I'm not going to get my news from Fox or CNN or MSNBC. Well, the problem is the event, the riot, the violence, that's real fake news. It's real news. It really happened. So it doesn't matter what source you go to. I don't know whose natural instinct out of the box is going to be to say, well, that whole thing was staged. I mean, you know, and there's other incidences that have occurred that have the same reek to them, where there's known what they call disaster actors that get hired to pretend they're in a disaster to help people practice. Well, Sandy Hook had a whole bunch of the disaster actors out there helping, you know. So maybe the disaster actors that had ran this scenario a couple days before of exactly what happened, maybe coincidentally, those disaster actors are also on, you know, a search and rescue or whatever. But it's also possible that they were practicing for that very event. There's also the possibility they don't know what they're part of a bigger scheme. These kids on the bus, all they know is that they get told, hey, show up at this event. You're going to dress up like KKK. You're going to dress up like BLM. And it'll be great. You know, we're going to get everybody intimidated and scared, and it's going to make a point. The left always says, whenever the left gets caught lying, they always say, well, yeah, but it's the point that matters. They'll always say, well, but at least it created a discussion. I've heard that so many times, I can't believe it. And you can always create a discussion, but not over false facts and fake news. Folks, what Trump was originally saying about there being a lot of good people there and getting slaughtered, guess what? It's true. And he knew the people who were mostly abused horribly, horrendously, were the people that, you know, they stood for the right. These are conservatives, hardcore fundamentalists. But you know what? What we've got going on is people trying to preserve our nation, our nationality, our founders. We are being told that everything is being, you know, brought down to a level of race. We're being told that, you know, you're one race, I'm another, that matters. And if you don't handle my race properly, we've got an issue. And because the founders of this nation were white, were Caucasian mostly, and there were slaves, because they were Caucasian, now they're pigs. You know, they use this modernistic approach where they look at everything through modern day eyes and they go, oh, he was a slave owner and a bigot. We're going to erase him from history. Well, that was the culture at the time. They say all these things that are erroneous about Jefferson. Oh, you know, he was for separation of church and state. And they'll take one letter out of context. They do this all over the place. And they say, well, he wasn't a Christian. They'll take letters from all these people. You know, if you read my letters over the years and you wanted to twist and turn, you might be able to construe some letter to look like I wasn't a Christian, maybe. I don't know. But the point is, you know, it's the consistency over time. But what they want to do is remove all these monuments. Folks, this is what ISIS does. This is what communism does. They remove all evidence of the people's identity. They strip away your identity. What do they do when a man joins the military? They shave his hair, they take away all of his clothes, and they give everybody the same clothes and the same haircut, and they all live together in the same barracks, and they get the same storage chests, and they get the same underwear, and they get the same everything. They get the same belts, the same hats. They get the same beds. They get the same pillows. Do you see? And why? Because they break them down and then build them back up to be what they want them to be. Fortunately, our military does a good job of it. They build good people. But this is the mindset of the dark side, the devil. Strip away the identity God gave you. Strip away your heritage. They want to strip away all of our heritage as a nation and lie to us. Later in a while, I'm going on a tour with David Barton of D.C., and I'll hopefully have a great time learning about our spiritual heritage. It's called Spiritual Heritage Tours. I'm looking forward to it. But I'm telling you, folks, this is what's going on. And they're going to start taking down more statues. And the answer is yes, they're going to go after George Washington. These are great men. The accomplishments of Robert E. Lee, because he was for the South. Folks, it's crazy that they want to rewrite history. I don't get it. I don't know why they think that they're this new, you know, better. I don't know what it is. It scares me. I think it would scare me if I was young, but maybe I'd be that dumb to try to erase history. They're not being educated on what communism does. It's crazy how, you know, I grow up, communism's this bad thing you're afraid of. They teach you how bad it is. And maybe because it lingers, I don't know. But why would the latter generations embrace it? Why through history do men do this over and over again? If you don't think they do, you're wrong. They always want a king. They want the greatest king ever. They ascribe personal attributes and personality characteristics and traits to a king that he never had. Humans tend to deify a man. Human beings without God want a deity, so they create a deification of a man. It makes no sense, but we do it over and over. We want idols. You know, God even says, don't make graven images. We tend to want to make graven images so bad that God has to give us a commandment not to do it. Why? What about him? He comes with rules and regs, I guess. We don't want the God of rules and regs. We want the wood carving God that does whatever we want, that we sit and cry and weep and beg and nothing ever happens because it's not a real God. But this is what we're doing in this nation. We're making a godless religion. Folks, when you get down to the nitty gritty of this separation of church and state, where in the 60s they removed God from the courts, and since then every major bad activity a society can experience has happened. When they remove God, that, and then they go in and they actually call atheism, which is the quintessential anti-religion, a religion. It's not. By the way, there is a movie out now on like Apple TV or whatever called The Case for Christ. Fantastic, terrific, amazing movie. The true story of Lee Strobel, Pulitzer Prize winning, whatever you call it, journalist. Sorry, man. I came running in here pretty quick. Just terrific. That movie's phenomenal. It's the true story of Lee Strobel on his hunt to find Christ. His wife came to Christ. He was a hardcore atheist, big shot journalist. But what I like about the movie is he got mad that his wife became a Christian, and he decided to go research it to disprove it. Because he was a big shot journalist, that he was hopping on planes. He was going and talking to top medical professionals about the effects of a crucifixion. He was literally flying around to experts on the validity of the manuscripts and finding out that there are 5,800 manuscripts, original manuscripts from around the first, second century, where Iliad, there's only like 1,200 original transcripts, and the newest is 800 AD. You know, in the Christian, I mean, there's just so much evidence, no one refutes it. None of the liberal universities, any true historian does not refute the crucifixion and death of Christ. The resurrection, that's where faith comes in. But what a fantastic movie, folks. If you want a good movie, get it. Watch it. Not only is it awesome content, the acting's good. It's a good, good movie. It's so awesome for any non-believer, you know. It's called The Case for Christ, and you cannot sit through it. If you have a brain and you care, you can't sit through that movie and not get something out of it. That movie is fantastic. Anyway, I think I've done that enough times. Have I not? Okay. So let's talk here about, let me see what I can conjure up here. One thing I haven't talked enough about, I suppose fairly, is this the flood in Houston and Texas, folks. This thing is terrible. It's tough. It always leaves you with questions. You know, I'll have people ask me, how can God do this? God doesn't technically do it. He allows it. Good things come out of disaster. But I'm telling you, that is a serious, serious, serious flood. It's very scary. It's tough. The cost, it's Hurricane Harvey. And it is supposedly over $200 billion now and counting from the last estimate I read 2 days ago. Is over $200 billion. We're heading to $250 billion. By the time the dust settles, where are we going to be? $500 billion? I mean, this is going to be a government bailout, a disaster relief bailout, and it'll hurt that economy down there. I know a guy who has issues in his life, who actually stole from us. And he made a choice to move to that area right before the hurricane hit. And I know he's not exactly affected by the water, but economically, he just sells cars now. But, I mean, it's going to be hit hard. It's going to be tough to do that. It's going to be tough to sell anything down there for a while. And contractors are going to be backed up and overwhelmed. People's houses are going to sit unrepaired probably for a couple years. It's going to get serious. And the damage, we had a house when I grew up in Montana in the Smith River, which is, they call it the Little Grand Canyon. It's absolutely beautiful. But we had a massive flood 1 year that came up, you know, to the windows. And other houses in the area just got uprooted and tossed down the river and smashed on cliffs. But I'm telling you, flood cleanup is so much worse than you can ever imagine. Your house, you think about, we had a cabin, so we couldn't tear it down and replace it. The whole thing's full of mud. I mean, everywhere you can imagine, mud. In all of your cupboards and your all of your appliances are devastated. All your furniture's destroyed, and it's soaked the walls. It's filled with mud and filth and guck. And tree branches and, you know, I mean, just beyond your dreams. It's so horrific, the destruction that water can do. We know the earth was created out of water. Water's a big part of it. But water has its, you know, the Bible said that, you know, the water, God contained the water and said, you know, told it where it can and can't go, which is based primarily on atmospheric pressure and so on. So Hurricane Harvey, pray for those people, folks. That's serious, serious stuff. It's sometimes when you're far away, it's on the news. This is real stuff to real people, and I just wanted to say that. I think that's pretty important. I may have mentioned this, but it kind of stood out to me. The other day, I was going into the courthouse. I had to go down there and... I went wrong. I went to the wrong area. I thought I was renewing my license. And I went through the security checkpoint, and behind me was a lady, and she, I think I already discussed this on the show. She's carrying through this baby. The security guy says, "What happened to him?" And she says, "Oh, he got his immunizations." He goes, "Let me see it." And he says, "How old is he?" And she says, 4 months. And this little baby's legs, this poor little baby's legs were black and blue, folks. He got shots on both legs. They were black and blue. The entire back of the leg was black and blue. And that guy was just sickened and saddened. I mentioned this before, but I'm telling you, immunizations, folks, they're bad. And you need to stand up. Don't let them put that stuff in your body. I did a show on it a while ago. It's serious, serious stuff. It will destroy your body. It, you know, and of course I'm a quacko wacko. They'll say, "You're not a doctor. You don't know anything." This is another one of the methods that they're using to destroy traditional faith in human intellect. They get, it's called academic collectivism, and they want experts. Everything has to be resounded by an expert. A good example is when we were in a tropical vacation a few years back, or a number of years back. When I was going through college, I got EMR and EMT certified because I was studying. You know, I was getting my degree in math and PE, fitness, health and food nutrition, because I was going to be a high school teacher and, you know, and all this and a coach. And that didn't work. When I got down to the very end, the paraprofessionals, and I was working with the high school kids, I just said, this isn't going to work. I want to teach people that want to learn, not people that act like they're locked in a prison all day. So I went on to applied mathematics and became an actuary or whatnot. But when I was studying health and food nutrition, I got someone popping their head in the door here. All right. Okay. All right. So anyway, sorry about that. I got a little sidetracked there. That's kind of weird, but it was important. So I think what I'll do, I know I just jumped off of that last topic. What I want to kind of do here is finish the show. Yesterday I kind of talked about fear as a sin, and I didn't feel like I got through all of it. And the show started out based on Revelation 21:8 that says, but the cowardly and unbelieving, abominable, sexually immoral, etc., basically are going to hell. This is crazy stuff. Now, when you read this stuff, obviously it's not saying if you've had fear or you've lied or you've committed this, you're going to hell. It's people, this is what they are in their heart, okay? There are people out there that choose fear to consume them constantly. And as I said a minute ago, you know, you've got so much medication going on. This is why 25% of society now is on antidepressants and all this kind of stuff. They've got people so gripped with fear of what's going on around them, or a lack of control, chaos. I don't know. People have phobias that are unbelievable. If you go to, I found an online dictionary that would blow your mind. It had over 150 phobias listed. So I'll just highlight what I covered yesterday. So basically it says the cowardly and unbelieving. And in the Bible, five times it puts together fear and unbelief as one combination. Fear and unbelief. Fear and unbelief. And by the way, just I can finish that story from before that I didn't. So when I was getting my minor, studying health and food nutrition, and I was taking a lot of other classes, and I went through a class that basically got me EMR and EMT certified, emergency medical rescue and technician. And my family had a charter service. We had a helicopter that we used to use to do search and rescue and all this stuff. So I was very knowledgeable in emergency search and rescue. I used to do it, and in very remote locations. And I apologize, I jumped off of that. I got distracted. An employee had a very important issue to deal with, which that's very rare that they'd bother me in the studio otherwise. But the point was this. I was in a resort. This person gets hurt pretty bad. And I'm treating them. I'm doing everything I know. You know, I'm elevating. I'm applying pressure. I'm doing all these things. You know, I'm applying bandages. I'm telling people what to do and where to go. And I'm taking care of this guy, and he's doing all right. And his wife comes running up, and she's hysterical. She's a foo-foo prima donna. And she starts screaming at me. Who are you and what do you think you're doing to my husband? I said, I'm helping him. He fell down. I'm thinking, okay, she's, you know, that's how she responds to, alarm. And she says, are you a doctor? I said, no. And before I could tell her I'm EMT certified and all that, she says, well, get out of here then. We don't need your help if you're not a doctor. And the husband's laying there. Obviously, he's the kind that lets her run the show. And I'm like, what? And then she just pushes me away. I mean, it was really an awkward situation. And all of a sudden, his bleeding starts. And it's, you know, I mean, she just basically starts this gushing blood. And I'm like, ma'am, you gotta get this elevated above the heart. You know, and she's, oh, you don't know what you're doing. I mean, terribly rude. Putting the husband in a terrible situation. Luckily, about a minute after that, a doctor shows up and immediately makes them go back and do exactly what I was doing. And one of the things I was doing, he'd forgotten, and I reminded him. And I looked at that lady and I just said, see, lady, I said, I know what I'm doing or whatever. And she just didn't say anything. But the point is this. This is academic collectivism. Experts. Only experts can know. Only an expert with a uniform or an expert with a badge or a title. And the thing the left is into is always accusing the right of being uneducated. Folks, you do not need a college education to use the brain God gave you. Believe me, I've studied my share. I've got degrees and everything else. It's, you know, mine's a little skewed because I studied applied mathematics. And I'll be honest, after 4 solid years of studying mathematics and physics, my brain got pretty darn sharp. But that still, it helped me logically and whatnot. But there's so many curriculums that are not like that. My wife got her degree in elementary ed. She learns in early childhood development, I should say, a master's. But, you know, she learns a lot about childhood development stuff. But she doesn't learn anything that's going to help her to understand God and politics and religion. You know what I mean? And they want you to think experts. And it's the same when I'm in that situation where I'm trying to help somebody in an emergency crisis. And they're telling me, you don't have the proper, identity. You don't have the proper letters behind your name. We don't need to listen to you. And so you need to be aware of this collective academic collectivism where you got to be an expert. There's all this modernism where we view all the historical events through modern day eyes. We don't have enough brains to realize things were different back then. We think somehow we're superior and better, and we're not. But we've just got to be real sensitive to respecting the past for the context of where it was. So sin is a fear. I talked about where Nehemiah had, I think, Sanballat and whoever, Tobiah, tell him to go hide in the temple because people were coming to kill him. He said, no way, I'm not going to do it. I'm not that kind of a guy. Why would a guy like me hide from somebody anyway? I'm a man of God. And he says down here in Nehemiah 6, like around 10 or about, I guess it'd be around 13 or something. He says, for the reason he was hired, that I should be afraid and act that way and sin, so that might have cause for an evil report that they might reproach me. And it basically says he had that I might, oh, where did it go? It says in here that I might be afraid and sin. Then I perceived God had not sent him at all, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this reason he was hired, that I should be afraid and act that way and sin. So a fear of sin, responding to sin. And then it talks about in Romans 14:23, he who doubts is condemned. If you don't eat by faith, it says, and it goes into the whole details of, you know, at that time there was a big deal about that. That, and it basically says, whatever is not from faith is sin. And then you go on, Matthew 22:36 through 38 is where he talks about, let's see. Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law? He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. We all know that. You can't fear and have faith at the same time. You've got to have God first. So, and then it talks about, you know, fear is contagious. You have the men that are going into the promised land that went and looked at the land and came back and said, man, this is really bad. We can't go up against these people. These are the giants. He says, the land we went to as spies is land that devours its inhabitants. All the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants, it says. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight and in their sight. Then it goes on and it says, the whole congregation lifted up their voices and they cried and they wept and they carried on and said, only if we had died. They complained against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in the land of Egypt. If only we had died in the wilderness. Why did Lord, I'm reading the scripture, by the way. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? They're not worried about their wives and children. They're worried about themselves. Wouldn't it be better, he says, if we could return to Egypt and then go die as slaves? I mean, folks, this is the mentality, a slave's mentality. Then it says the children of Israel basically panicked in numbers. It says, how long, you know, they panicked and they freaked out. And then God says, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I've heard the complaints which the children of Israel make against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. And then he says, the carcasses of you, not the bodies, not the corpses, but the carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in this wilderness, all of you who were numbered. And then he goes on, everyone 20 years and above. He doesn't, you know, if you want God's best, if you want something out of God, don't go complain to him and say, why me, woe is me. That doesn't work. You got to thank God, be grateful. You know, fear does not differ from dread, consternation, surprise, anger, disgust, hatred, and horror all contain elements of fear. Jealousy is fear of loss and wanting to take away from others. Guilt is fear of God's punishment, and so on. I went over that. So, and then we go on where, you know, Peter was in the garden or in the courtyard after they'd taken Jesus, and he had the servant girl of the high priest comes and says, you also were with Jesus of Nazareth. But he denied it, saying, I neither know nor understand what you are saying. And he went out on the porch, and a rooster crowed. And the servant girl saw him again and began to say to those who stood by, this is one of them. But he denied it again. Or denied him again. He denied Jesus again. And he began to say to those who stood by, this is one of them. But he denied it again. And a little later, those who stood by said to Peter, surely you're one of them, for you're a Galilean, and your speech shows it. Then he began to curse them and swear. So now he's cussing, cursing, swearing. You blankety blanks, quit blanking, accusing me of blanking. He says, I do not know this man of whom you speak. And then a second time the rooster crowed. Then Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said to him, before the rooster crows twice, you'll deny me three times. And when he thought about it, he wept. So what happened there? Fear, right? More fear. Fear. Where does fear start? Think of this. Now, I know we're probably short on time, my specialty. Okay. Think of this in Psalm 78. It says, for the Jews, for he divided the sea before them and led them through. The water stood up like walls beside them. In the daytime, he led them by a cloud, and at night by a pillar of fire. He split open the rocks in the wilderness to give them plenty of water. As from a gushing spring, he made streams pour from the rock, making the waters flow down like a river. And then it goes on and it says, yet they kept on with their sin, rebelling against the Most High in the desert. They willfully tested God in their hearts, demanding the foods they craved. They even spoke against God himself, saying, God can't give us food in the desert. Yes, he can strike a rock so water gushes out, but he can't give his people bread and meat. When the Lord heard them, he was angry. The fire of his wrath burned against Jacob. It says, yes, his anger rose against Israel. Folks, that's some crazy stuff. These people experience the ultimate of ultimates. We read this and we're like, magnificent. It is a slave's mindset, the mindset of a slave. You know, there's white trash out there. You think small, you think little, you think you're not thinking big, you're not getting yourself into a position where God can speak to you large things, big ideas. Positive. There's churches out there. We went to one for years, not too long, but when we were in Montana, we were in a small area where there was very little choice. Independent Baptist, King James Bible only, and they believe literally they're the only ones going to heaven. And if you don't have their baptism, because they claim their baptism comes from John the Baptist, if you don't have their baptism, you're not truly baptized. This stuff's true. And then it's hellfire and brimstone. They beat you over the head. You are God's creation. You are created in His image. You do not need to go to church and get yelled at and screamed at and told how sinfully stupid you are. You know your failures. And some of us think it's part of our beating. We need to take our beating. So we go to this Bible thumping church, if we want to call it that. I love Bible thumping. But, you know, the hellfire and brimstone. And we go and we get basically talked down to instead of built up and edified. That's a slave's mindset. These slaves are like, we don't care how many magnificent things. We want what we want. You broke us out of our habit. We're uncomfortable. We're out in the desert now, and I'm eating this manna, and sure, I got water when I was dying of thirst, but I'm tired of manna. And he's like, we're going to the, you know, Moses is like, I'm taking you to the land of milk and honey. He's got all these whiny, complaining, negative people, God's chosen, that God tried to rescue. Now, here's what happens. God brings them out in the desert. He's got to eradicate an entire generation before he brings them into the promised land because their attitude's so bad. He's got to clean out that whole generation of garbage attitude of these slaves. He's got to gut it. If he wouldn't have brought them out into the desert, he would and waited an entire generation, this negativity, like cancer, would have rolled right through them, and probably God may know that maybe the entire existence of the Jews would have been over in the next 30, 40 years. He had to save that's how he saved his bloodline. So even though God had given water in abundance, they're afraid he wouldn't provide bread and meat. So what's the cause for this fear? In 78:20, as we go on in Psalms 78 to 22, it says, for they did not believe God or trust him to care for them. Does that sound familiar? After all this, the reason they did it, they did not believe God or trust him. Amazing. After all he did for them, they still could not muster the necessary faith and trust in God and his love for them. You know, we need to ask ourselves, when push comes to shove, when the pressure's on, who do we believe? Fear or faith? Do we trust in God's care and love for us, or that it'll come to our aid? There's a lot of scriptures I could go to right now. But it says, the fire of his wrath burned against Jacob. That foreshadows foreshadows the future. So fire is the response to fear from the God who does not change. Fear is the result of a lack of faith, not believing in God's power, not believing in his love and willingness to act on our behalf. The fearful are that way because they lacked faith. Christ reveals this in Mark 4:40. He says, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And I could go on, but I don't got time, as usual. And that's the thing. I talk about investing. I say, don't come here for fear. Don't say, oh, all hell's going to break loose. Be a good steward. Be wise. Walk tall. Be strong. Be a good steward of what God gives you. We will help you do that. We build wonderful portfolios. You will do just fine. Our clients over the years have done terrific. Our margins are small. There's not a lot of profit in it at all, just a few percentage points. And we'll help you put your money away and preserve it for a rainy day the right way. Not, you know, folks, you need to realize, just as that hurricane hit, Hurricane Harvey, the same thing can happen in the stock market overnight. If you have mutual funds, I don't care if you have your money in a safe fund. If it's inside of a financial company, it's all going to be gone. I don't know when. Could be next month. It could be 2 months from now, 3 months from now. It could be next year. Could be 6 months. I don't know. Could be 2 years. Could be three. I don't know. But it's not a biblical way to handle your money. And it's inevitable that you've taken all your hard-earned money, bought their little widgets, and had them, you know, put it where they put it. By the way, if you, you know, watch Fox News, don't buy into this Atlanta Gold 401k or IRA stuff. They don't say 401k. Just if you're looking to do a 401k or IRA transfer, call Coins Plus 444-0044. We do them every day, all the time. We'll take good care of you. We can move your money into solid metals. If it's not in a 401k or IRA, pull it out. We will help you to secure it in a very wise investment vehicle. There's a lot of good stuff out there. I actually am still going through tremendous amounts of stuff from our family and my dad who passed, and combining my collection and grooming it. And it's a great, it's just a great time. If you want awesome stuff, this is the time. So appreciate you tuning in. Sorry for the oddity in the middle of the show. I pray that you'd have a wonderful Labor Day weekend, and be thankful for labor. God says he does it for our own good. Take care. God bless. And we'll be back Monday. Bye-bye.